You're a journalism teacher.
I am.
What, do you teach anything else at Hazelwood?
No, I taught creative writing for a year earlier, about 7 years ago, but since then it's been all journalism. I have three introductory journalism classes and then a newspaper production class and a yearbook production class.
Wow, wow. Did you take some journalism courses in college? How did you get into this field, this part of teaching?
Yeah, actually, I was in college at Truman State, and I was planning to be a journalist, and had a great professor, a great mentor, and he asked me one day, it was high school journalism day, and he asked me if I would be willing to teach a session to the high school kids who were prospective college students, and I didn't really, wasn't excited about it, but I really believed in this guy. He meant a lot to me, so I agreed, and I said, sure, I'd do that. Got into the room, and it was special. Something clicked. I don't know what it was. There was some energy, and I fell in love with it, changed my major from journalism to education, and got certified in journalism, but became a teacher. Haven't regretted it.
You do the yearbook, you do a school newspaper. What other things do you do?
Well, we have a slam poetry team that I coach. We're going into our second year with that. And we have a dropout prevention program called Project Walk, which I'm particularly happy about. We started that 3 years ago, and this is going to be the first year, this upcoming graduating class of 2015, where these kids that we started with are actually going to graduate. And that's been a pretty special program. We're very proud of that.
Does that have a connection with your role as journalism or in journalism?
No, not at all. Just other things different. That I do for the district.
Yeah.
I have a son with high functioning autism, and raising him, he's 21 now, raising him through school was hard on my wife and I, who's also a teacher. And it just taught us all kinds of strategies on how to work with kids who struggle with school. And by default, kind of come somewhat of an expert in that area. And so then when I go to school, dealing with some of these kids who struggle with school is really easy and, in fact, enjoyable. So when the idea came up to create a program to lower our dropout rate, I was all for it. So that's when we started that a few years ago. And about five graduation coaches participate. We have small groups of kids, maybe 8 to 10 in a class, meet with them for an hour and a half every other week, and kind of just give them individual attention, work with them on organization, on discipline, teach them some life skills, and give them hope. And that's the main thing. A lot of these kids have given up on themselves, and this program shows them that it's not too late.
Is that the most common denominator that you run into with kids who are at risk of dropping out is lack of hope?
There are a lot of factors. I think the factors get to the point where there's a lack of hope. There are factors that could be at home, there could be learning disabilities, there could be risky, you know, behavior, whether it's drugs or what have you. There could be a lot of things. But ultimately what happens is that a child gets so far behind that they throw their hands up and they're like, I'm done. There's no way I can make it. And then they just stop working, and that's when the failures start to pop up and the credits get so low that it becomes almost impossible for them to graduate. And that's when we step in and ask them if they want to be involved in the program. Almost all of them are eager to do it because they realize they're at the point of no return. And for a lot of these kids, not all of them, because you're not going to make that difference in 100% of them, but for a good percentage of them, they turn things around and now they're going to graduate. It's going to be a very emotional graduation ceremony this year, I think.
How important is it to these kids to know that there's somebody who hasn't given up on them, even if they're
everything.
On the verge of giving up on themselves?
It's everything. You'd have to experience it, I think, to truly get it. When you have a child, it's funny. I was just the other day. I was in my classroom with these kids, and I'm talking with a few of them. We're reminiscing about how when they first started the program and what their mindset was and what their mindset is now, and it was almost an emotional experience just thinking about how they've changed their reference, their perspective on their lives. You know, there were kids who were hurting themselves, you know, kids who just wanted to drop out and run away and scary stuff, real serious stuff. And now they're going to graduate, and they're actually helping some of the younger kids who are then coming into the program. It's just a really special, especially special experience to be part of.
Well, let me just ask you about your journalism program. How many of the kids come into your journalism classes? Well, before I do that, you mentioned earlier you have a special poetry program.
Yeah, we have an event. You know, even though I teach journalism, there are a lot of different things I'm involved with at the school. One of them is Writers Week, and this started, I'm thinking, 6 or 7 years ago, where we have a week in February and March where we dedicate it to writing, and we bring in professional authors, novelists, poets, songwriters, rappers, spoken word poets, and we bring them into the school, and then kids come into the auditorium, and these people perform and talk about their craft. Some kids get up there and do some, perform some of their writing, and some teachers do too. And we've been doing this, for several years. So that's another one of the things that I'm involved in at Hayeswood West.
Did you call it a slam poetry?
So slam poetry is like a performance poetry with specific rules. It's a competition. And all the poems are 3 minutes. It's all spoken word. There's no music. They're usually fairly emotional. They're very powerful type pieces. When I talk to students about it, I try to explain to them that it's a cross between poetry and rap, and you really kind of meld those two things together, and that's what it feels like. So St. Louis actually has a slam poetry league that we joined last year. And one of our students actually won the individual competition, and then our team took second in it. And the kids just, they love it, which is nice to see kids loving poetry.
Well, I was going to ask, it's a lot of kids, I remember many, many years ago when I was in high school, and my own children too, when you started talking poetry, they kind of turned up their noses.
Yeah, isn't your Emily Dickinson kind of poetry.
What is it about poetry, though, that hooks these kids, that reaches that part of their mind that encourages them to express themselves this way?
Well, I think all people, but especially adolescents, especially teenagers, have this craving to express themselves, to get out their feelings and for people to hear them and to validate their feelings. And this is a great venue for that, because they can talk about very serious issues. A lot of the issues involved in this kind of poetry are very deep and sometimes serious. And we found that our students and students all over the country use this kind of poetry to then express themselves and deal, almost in like therapy, with some of the things that they're dealing with. The audience gets involved, and it's enjoyable for them too. And there's just an energy in the room with this kind of experience. So a lot of the kids really, as far as Writers Week go, it's one of their favorite parts of the week.
Well, let me ask you about your journalism classes. Mm-hmm. What do you find are the reasons that the students come into a journalism class?
A few reasons. One, it's an English elective, and they're required to take 2 English electives before they graduate. So I get some kids who come in there simply because they need the credit to graduate. I have other kids come in there because they like to write, and then I have a few kids every year that come in there because they think they want a career in journalism. So it's really a broad, broad range, and I get kids with extremely low ability and kids with extremely high ability. In fact, 2 of those 3 journalism classes are CT classes, which means I co-teach them with a special school district teacher. So about a third of the students in those 2 classes have IEPs and have some kind of disability or issue with learning. But it allows us then to reach everyone, regardless of their ability level, in an exciting way because you're using current events, and it's real, it's meaningful to them. And I guess the way I explain it to them, it's more like thinking 101 than it is journalism 101. And it prepares them to think logically, to be skeptical, to be analytical. And that's a very good skill, regardless of what you end up doing after high school, whether you want to be a journalist or not.
Yeah, there's always a special skill about being able to observe something and then be able to relate that to somebody else accurately and in a way that emphasizes why it's important that other person know about it.
Right. Just the like empathy and objectivity. We don't have too many opportunities in a high school curriculum to really focus on those things. And this gives us a lot of opportunities to do that, which I think is very important.
Well, I'm sure you have been watching what has been happening over in Ferguson for the last couple of weeks. Are there things that have been going on there in terms of not only the events, but the way journalists have behaved in Ferguson that going to be able to transfer to your classroom?
You're the only person that's asked me this question, and I'm glad you did. On that Sunday night, the Sunday after the day that Michael Brown was shot and killed, I went down to Ferguson. It was the night before school started, so our first day of class was the next Monday. And the idea was I would go observe the march. There was going to be a march from the Canfield apartments up West Florissant. And I was going to observe, because I knew this was a big story, probably going to be the biggest story in St. Louis all year, regardless of the violence, because there wasn't any violence at that point. So I went to observe, and I was going to take back my observations and take them back to the class, and the class was going to talk about how would you ethically and responsibly and compassionately report on this issue, and I would give them some eyewitness accounts. Well, Sunday night didn't turn out quite the way that I thought it would, and while the march was fine, once it got dark, things got out of hand. And when I realized things were getting out of hand, I started to go back to my car, which was, I had to pass the Quick Trip that they burned down, and they were looting it at the time, and I got hit with a brick in the head, and I got 6 stitches, and they took my phone, and then some ladies came and helped me and walked me to a police barricade down West Florissant, where I stayed for about 5.5 hours until it was safe to get in my car and go home. So that was, I had a lot to talk about with the kids. Didn't anticipate it to go like that, but it was very informative. And what I brought back to them was, and I told them, I said, I want you to hear me very clearly because people are going to be talking about this. They know that this has happened to me. And I want you to get the story straight. You know, 98% of the people that I met that night were there for the right reason. They were positive. They might have been angry, but they were peaceful. They wanted to make a point. They wanted to participate in democracy. And that was all good. And then there was a very small portion of people who, once the others kind of dissipated and left, they turned violent. But that was such the minority of the group that was there that night. And when you watch TV, you don't see it that way. So I wanted my students to realize that. And when we talked about that in a journalistic context, is what we see on TV and what we hear on the radio and read in the newspapers, is that an accurate representation of reality? And what responsibility as journalists do we have to try our best to keep that in context so people actually see the truth? So it turned out to be a great way to begin the year, a little bit painful, but very, very educational.
What kind of response did you get from the students?
Our students at Hazelwood, and I don't know what other schools are doing, at least the ones in my class, all I can speak of, were very responsible and intelligent. There were no people making inappropriate comments or, you know, outlandish statements. Nobody was trying to ruffle anyone's feathers. Everyone just wanted it to settle down. Everyone wanted it, you know, us to just find a way to get along. You saw the best sides of the kids when we talked about this, because these weren't kids that they have no vendetta. They have no, you know, they're not trying to hurt anyone. They don't want anybody to get hurt. And they're caught in the middle of this. I would say all of my students know someone who lives in Ferguson. I surveyed them, and about a third of them had actually lived in Ferguson before they moved into the Hazelwood School District. So this is very, very personal to them, even though we're a neighboring district and we're not in Ferguson, Florissant. It was personal, and they were curious and compassionate.
There's a lot of things I'm sure you're going to be drawing from this whole experience, not only that night, but the whole 2 weeks, and feeding into your students and the class experience for the rest of the school year, I think.
Absolutely, and long beyond that, you know, to be able to use those experiences, you know, being there that night to take it to those kids every year, you know, when we talk about this, because it does provide great opportunities to talk about the difference between journalistic theory and ethics and the reality of the business, which can be ugly. And you know, so many people, because they know that I teach journalism, would come up to me, whether it's at school, other teachers or students or just people out and about in the community, and say, you're a journalist. You know, what do you think of how the journalists are covering this? And I'm objective, and I see it from both sides, but, you know, what I try to explain to them is that at the time, they're reporting on the truth that they see. And however skewed it may seem once other facts come out, at that moment, and they're in a race to do it against other journalists, so that's their job. And it may not look pretty as it comes out, but we need people to do that. At the same time, you know, there's some... I live three blocks away from the police officer who shot Michael Brown in Crestwood. And, you know, Channel 5 went to his house with a camera and put it on TV. And so we talked about that in class. Is that necessary? Is that journalism? So, yeah, lots and lots of opportunities for learning when it comes to this.
Yeah. Did you see yourself continuing to be a journalism teacher for the next 20 years or so?
Do I?
Yeah.
I do. I don't plan on teaching anything else, if that's what you mean.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to write. You know, I have two passions when it comes to career, writing and teaching. And I'm hoping that when my teaching career ends, then I'll be able to pick up that second career, which is writing.
Now, does Hazelwood have any kind of a student radio station or anything like that within the school?
No, we were talking. It's weird that you asked that, because I was just talking with some students today about podcast. We've got a TV studio. It's old, outdated equipment, but we've got a brand new studio because we did remodeling. We just don't have modern equipment. So we have the capability of doing TV broadcasts. We used to. So that's probably going to come back.
Well, are you also doing much teaching in terms of the changing face of journalism? Because we're going away from the standard newspaper on the porch in the morning and radio yeah. and television stations into this much broader area. How does that impact what you're teaching your kids?
I get almost all my news through the radio when I'm in my car and through Twitter when I'm not in my car. So I subscribe to or I follow a bunch of different news sites, and I would explain to the students. I'd say, for instance, when I pull my phone out and I'd go to my Twitter feed, 4 seconds ago this happened, you know, 2 minutes ago this happened. Then we talk about how that's changed journalism, the immediacy of everything, and, you know, the good and the bad that comes with that. So, yeah, we talk about that quite a bit.
How very few of your students are probably ever going to go into journalism, but how is taking your class going to prepare them as once they graduate and once they're in the adult world to deal with the media as consumers?
Yeah, you know, that's what I tell the kids. I tell them, I say, you know, not many of you are going to be journalists. And I get about two or three a year who go to journalism school, mostly at Mizzou, some who are journalists now. But, yeah, it's definitely the minority of the kids. Most of the kids are in there because they like to write or they just need the credit. And I explain to them that you don't want to be manipulated. And when you understand journalism and you understand media and you understand mass communications, then you're wiser and you can make wiser decisions and you can be more intelligent rather than just sitting and listening and thinking this is everything I'm hearing is true or it's honest. And sometimes something can be true but be out of context and not be honest. So we talk about that and how important that is. We talk about the responsibilities of journalists and the fact that if we didn't have them as consumers, what would that mean to us? If we didn't have people who told us objectively what products actually were and how good they were and how bad they were, the politics, the government, you know, if we didn't have these government watchdogs to watch these people, what would our society be like? So, yeah, we talk about journalism probably more in how they would deal with it as, not as journalists, but just as citizens.
You know, the Teacher of the Year comes to Jefferson City every year and addresses the House and addresses the Senate. I know it's pretty early, but have you given any thought to what you would like to tell the politicians and the legislature?
I have. I think that it's going to depend on when I actually am doing that and what is in the news and what is being discussed and what they're debating, deliberating at the time. I have a feeling that, you know, a lot of the buzzwords are standardized testing and teacher tenure, tying teachers, you know, Constitutional Amendment 3 and tying teachers' performance to test scores and that kind of thing. So obviously that would be something that I would address. I'm a big, huge believer in getting business people into the schools and to nurturing a relationship with parents, with the community. In fact, just this year, this is another thing that I'm involved in. We just initiated a freshman parent orientation where we went out before the school year started and knocked on the doors of the parents of the incoming freshmen, introduced ourselves and simply said, you know, welcome to Hazelwood West. We're going to have this event to help you, help your child acclimate towards high school. Here's our phone number, you know, and to personalize it. So we can develop a relationship with the families as opposed to just this place you send your kid. You know, elementary schools have that kind of relationship, but as your children get older, you lose that. We want to have that kind of sense of community. So we've started doing that. That's one of the things I would talk about, too, would be the facilitation of families and community into the school, and then also bringing, you know, business people into the school.
I've had so many teacher friends talk about the lack of parental support in the home being reflected then in the classroom with the kids. But it sounds like to me you folks are going out to build bridges early on to curb some of those problems, at least, it sounds like.
That's really critical. You know, there's you know, I'm sure you've heard of this research called the 30 million word gap, where they've done research on children from families that are on welfare, that are impoverished, children from families that are working class, blue collar, and children who are from families whose parents have college educations. And the number of words that these children hear by the time they're three between the educated families and the impoverished families adds up to about 30 million words. So these children are behind before they ever get to school. And we need to take that into consideration. And it's not a blaming of the parents. And I hear that from time to time. It's just a dealing with the reality. So what we do, I think, is we reach out to that community. We find out, you know, what they need, what they want. And we try to just build that relationship so we do this together. It doesn't do us any good to sit back and say, you know, this would be easier job if they would do their job. That's not healthy, and that's not going to make a difference. So we need to build this relationship.
Well, this has been very, very interesting discussion, not only from the standpoint of a journalist to speaking to another journalist. I've been a journalist for more than 40 years, and I can't think of anything I'd rather have done with my life than be a reporter. And I've been fortunate that I've been able to cover the state capitol. I've spent too much of my life in the state senate, for example. But it's a wonderful field, and I'm so glad to see a journalism teacher in a high school get this kind of award, because the kinds of things that young people can learn through journalism enables them to be much more perceptive adults when they grow up. So
Can I say one more thing along
those
lines?
Sure.
Just exactly what you're talking about. One of the things that we did this year for the first time during spring break is I took half a dozen kids and we went down to Hidalgo County, Texas, which is down in the southern tip of Texas on the Rio Grande, right on the Mexican border. And we went there for a week, and the kids stayed with families and went to high school at Weslaco East High School, and they covered immigration reform from the perspective of teenagers. And the whole point was, objectively, to figure out what is it like for the kids who are living in that. So they talked to kids who are undocumented. They talked to families who are undocumented. They talked to families who were third-generation immigrants. You know, we exposed them to that serious issue and very timely and explosive issue, and gave them the opportunity to really immerse themselves in it and understand it, so then they could share that back with their community in the Midwest, where this is largely foreign to us in Missouri. We don't really have to deal with this much. So I'm really excited about that program, and we're trying to do that on a yearly basis or every other year. That was a pretty exciting trip.
Will you take the students down there to the same place next year?
No, we'll do something different. Uh-huh. We've talked about a Native American reservation. We've talked about homelessness. I actually have a former student who's in law school in Georgia, the Republic of Georgia, former Russia. And we've talked about taking kids over there in the summer and doing work on developing democracy. So what does a country look like that's trying to establish this democracy? We don't really see that because we've had it, you know, for 200 years. But these people, it's really very new for them. So that hopefully that will pan out, too, in a couple of years.